The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 2, text number 59, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari. Recorded on October 16th, 2010, in Pune, India.
So, tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 2, text number 59. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vishaya vinivartante, nirahar vashya dehina, rasavarshyam sopyasya, parangrishvanivartate, vishaya vinivartante, nirahar vashya dehina rasavarjam visopyashya parandrishvani vartate. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Purport. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. The process of restriction from sense enjoyment by rules and regulations is something like restricting a diseased person from certain types of eatables. The patient, however, neither likes such restrictions nor loses his taste for eatables. Similarly, sense restriction by some spiritual process like Ashtanga Yoga in the matter of Yam, Niyam, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dhanana, Dhyana, etc. is recommended for less intelligent persons who have no better knowledge. But one who has tasted the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna in the course of his advancement in Krishna consciousness no longer has a taste for dead material things. Therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. Shri Guru Shri Jata Balakamala Shri Guru Vaishnava Shcha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathan Vita Tam Saji Sadai
Jivitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha.
You know what's really special about this prepara? Tasting the beauty of the Supreme Lord Krishna. You ever think about Krishna consciousness like that? I would like to taste the beauty of Krishna. You ever thought of it like that? That's what Krishna consciousness means. It means to taste the beauty of Krishna. We don't normally talk about tasting beauty, do we? Tasting is something you put in your mouth. Has anyone ever thought about eating beauty? It's not the normal way we speak. So this is very poetic. You see what Prabhupada said, it's a very, very poetic thing. To taste the beauty of Krishna. And then what else does Prabhupada say? When one has that taste, you see, and he loses his taste for pale things. So, what is pale? Those things that are not Krishna conscious, they are pale. You see. They may appear to be very tasty things from the material point of view. That taste is called tamasic taste, rajasic taste, sattvic taste. But when one comes to this platform to taste Krishna, that is the transcendental platform. So the question then is for the tadaka, how do I get that taste for Krishna? How can I taste the beauty of Krishna? Now I am running mad like a dog after so many material tastes, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, trying to squeeze some pleasure out of this bag called the material body, but how do I get this taste for the beauty of Krishna? This is the question asked by the intelligent person. In other words, you don't become intelligent simply by going after an engineering degree. You become intelligent by wanting to know, how can I taste the beauty of Krishna? That is intelligent. So then, how do we taste it? How do we get that taste? It's described in this sloka. As long as we try to restrain ourselves from sense gratification without getting the higher taste, it is an artificial position. You understand? It is an artificial position as long as you try to restrain yourself from material sense gratification, we have the picture there, without getting the taste. In other words, if you want to be successful in transcendental life, simply restraining yourself from material sense gratification will not make you successful. It'll make you frustrated eventually. You see? It's like, who is that famous yogi? He became a master of the Ashtanga system, Vishwamitra Muni. He became a master of the yoga system, the Ashtanga system described here by Prabhupada. He went through all the steps, yam, niyam, you see, the do-nots, the do's, asana, the sitting postures, pranayama, the breathing exercises, pratyahara, cutting off all material sense objects. He went through all the steps. He became perfect in Ashtanga yoga, you see. But when that beautiful Menaka was sent by Indradev to tempt him, he was frustrated with his yoga practice. Oh, what is this yoga? Look at this beautiful woman here. But when that Muslim who became a devotee, who was totally absorbed in chanting, even though he was from a Muslim family, when he became totally absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna, even the most beautiful young woman, naked before him, begging for sexual intercourse, could not divert his mind even the slightest degree from Krishna consciousness, because he was tasting the beauty of Krishna. In other words, once you are tasting the beauty of Krishna, every so-called beauty of this material world is pale, ugly, insignificant in comparison. Krishna is the source of all the beauty. So once you connect with Krishna, in any beautiful thing in this material world, if it's separated from Krishna, it has no beauty. And if it's connected with Krishna, it has full beauty. In other words, because Krishna is the source of this entire world, this entire existence, if it is reconnected with Krishna through the process of bhakti yoga, then the whole world will become very beautiful. I'm traveling all over the world now, and I see it is very ugly. This material world, the more it becomes disconnected with Krishna, the more it becomes ugly. Just like it was such an ugly scene taking the road from Pune to Nigadi the other night. The traffic was horrible. It was like hell. It was just like going to the gates of hell, going on that road to Nigadi, you see. And then I saw the movie theater, it said, "Crooked, it's good to be bad." You see? In other words, the more you become disobedient to the laws of God, the more you turn this world into hell. I saw a direct connection between the hellish ride to Nigadi and that movie theater. It's all connected. I see it was all connected. The more you become disobedient to the laws of God, the more you turn this world into a hell. And the more you can live in harmony with the laws of God, you turn this, make this a heaven on earth. You see. So our Krishna consciousness movement, our mission is to turn this hell on earth, which has come by gross disobedience to the laws of God. Our mission is to create heaven on earth by bringing back the Vedic principles of God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, to this planet. So this is the most important mission for the elevation, the re-spiritualization, the liberation of the human society. No one can be happy without Krishna consciousness. Do you understand this point? Nobody can be happy unless they are Krishna conscious. I don't care how much money you have, how much power you have, what kind of degree you have. Doesn't matter. You will never be happy in this material world. But if you are Krishna conscious, no matter what your position is, you'll be the happiest person in the whole world, you see. You may say, but wait, there's so many devotees, how I could be the happiest? No, every devotee is the happiest person in the whole world. Any person who fully absorbs himself in Krishna consciousness is the happiest person in the whole world. That's a thing. And the bhakti of Krishna consciousness is like them. the bliss of Krishna consciousness is lengthened. You see, anyone who becomes purely Krishna conscious, they are filled with unlimited happiness. And some people say, but I see the devotees are suffering. I mean, look at Haridas Thakur. He was beaten in 22 marketplaces. How is he blissful when he's being beaten? Actually, he was blissful when he's being beaten. A devotee is completely transcendental to all the miseries of material existence, even in the most hellish, nightmarish conditions, because he has completely detached himself from his material body. He's simply using it as an instrument to serve Krishna. He does not identify with it. He's simply fully absorbed in bhakti ras. Because of this, consciousness, which is totally transcendental to the material existence, totally transcendental to the material body, totally transcendental to the three modes of material nature, no matter what position he is in this material world, he's ecstatic. Brahma Bhutta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakankshati Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhateparam. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once comes to the level of Brahman and becomes absolutely ecstatic. He doesn't lament over anything, he's not hankering after anything. He's equally disposed towards all living entities. And Krishna says, in that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So we're not talking about the state of Maharashtra here. We're talking about the state of Brahmabhutta. So we're inviting you all to move within your heart from the state, this is Maharashtra state, right? To move from the state of Maharashtra to the state of Brahmabhutta. If you were asking you all to relocate from Maharashtra to Brahmabhutta, because if you relocate to the state of Brahmabhutta, it's just next door to Goloka Vrindavan. If you're not qualified for Goloka, then at least qualify yourself for Brahmabhutta, because it's next door to Goloka. It's just across the border into Goloka, you see. And Krishna says, actually, if you come to Brahmabhutta, from that state you will attain pure bhakti, is guaranteed by Krishna. So try to understand, what is this Brahmabhutta state, you see? Do you see everyone is Krishna's part and parcel, therefore you love everyone? You see everything is the arrangement of Krishna, therefore you're never in anxiety in any circumstance of so-called gain or loss in this material world? You see? You see the hand of Krishna within everything. And in that state, you're completely happy because there's nothing to be worried about anymore because Krishna is controlling everything. You see, he's controlling absolutely everything at every second. And all you have to do is connect with him through chanting his names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in this way, if one can understand who he is, where he has come from, what is his purpose for existence, then he will achieve the supreme perfection of regaining his svarup upon leaving his material body. Punar janmana vidyate, he will not take birth again in this material world. He will enter into his eternal relationship with Krishna in that wondrous, mellifluous spiritual sky. In case you don't know the definition of mellifluous, it means flowing with sweetness. Or for devotees, it means oozing or emanating unlimited oceans of nectar. The Karmi definition is flowing with sweetness, but we know what flowing with sweetness means. But Krishna consciousness means emanating unlimited oceans of transcendental bliss. So this is the real meaning of, this is the higher understanding of the English word mellifluous. So if we take to this process, this mellifluous process, Krishna consciousness, which is emanating unlimited oceans of transcendental bliss at every minute, then we will be the happiest people, even happier than a non-devotee Brahma, who controls the whole universe. In other words, when you become purely Krishna conscious, you're more wealthy than anybody in the whole material world. You see? Why? Because you possess that person who owns everything. Bhuktaram jagatapasam sarvalokasam maheshvaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatvamam shantamrityati. Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of everything. I am the owner of everything. I am the best friend of everyone. And only those who know this can actually achieve peace. So, if you can simply know Krishna, you can become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then that person who owns, controls, enjoys everything, that person becomes your personal property, and in that condition you can never be short of anything. Never short of anything. As guaranteed by Krishna in chapter 9, text number 22 of the Bhagavad Gita. So while you're engaged in your material studies, see that as an opportunity of the Lord to become more expert in engaging matter in the service of Krishna. Krishna explains, or actually not Krishna, I don't know who's speaking, but in the Sri Isha Upanishad, as edited by Srila Vyasadeva, it is explained, vidyam cha vidyam yastad vedo vyam saha. One who can cultivate transcendental knowledge and mundane knowledge side by side can alone achieve the blessings of immortality. So now in the university, the Vidyalaya, I mean to say the Avidyalaya, you're cultivating mundane knowledge. And that's all right. You cultivate that vidyam cha vidyam yastad vedo vyam saha. You cultivate the mundane knowledge and the transcendental knowledge side by side. You connect that mundane knowledge with the service of Krishna. And in that way, you become perfect in spiritual life. Arjuna also had mundane knowledge. What was his mundane knowledge? How to fight the battle. You see, Kshatriya, that is military art. That is mundane. He wanted to give up his mundane educational skills and just go away from it. Krishna said, no, you take that mundane education of warrior and engage it in my service. So you cultivate the mundane education. That's all right. But now you, just as Arjuna, use that mundane educational knowledge in the service of Krishna. And you engage that in the service of Krishna. In this way, you will achieve the full blessings of immortality. So we have a few minutes left here. If there's any questions, you can pass the papers forward and I'll try to answer them. Okay, here's the first one. Can you please explain the meaning of enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness in detail? This is a very popular question. I answered it at the previous session in a different way, but it's the same question. To be enthusiastic means to never... lose your energy, you see. In other words, to remain always enthusiastic means never to become discouraged in any situation. That's what it means. And the way to do that is to see that the hand of Krishna is acting in all circumstances. That not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Lord. So you have to understand every situation you face at every minute is ultimately under Krishna's control. So, by remembering that and offering it to Krishna, therefore you'll never lose your enthusiasm. Okay, I am a student. Would you please explain the practical tips, principles that should be followed by balancing my academic studies and my spiritual life? Yes, chant 16 rounds every morning before you begin your academic activities. And then you will be surcharged with bhakti throughout the entire day. One of our members of ISKCON in Toronto, she was studying in the graduate school, very intense graduate school in Toronto. And she was also an ISKCON girl chanting 16 rounds every day. But she was feeling really, really overburdened with all the papers, the assignments, the exams, the lectures. It was just like too much. She came home and she had all these assignments to do, and it was just late night. What should I do? Should I chant my rounds? Should I do the papers? She didn't know what to do. Then she thought, well, let me put Krishna first. Let me get my rounds done. And as soon as she did that, she immediately knew, oh, I'm studying this subject matter for Krishna. I'm writing this paper for Krishna. I'm studying for this exam for Krishna. So if you will do your rounds first, you will do 16 rounds first thing, it's your first business, then everything will fit. All your academic activities, you just connect them with Krishna, that's all. And if you do the academic activities first without Krishna consciousness, then you're going to be a mess. Like psychological basket cakes, like Arjuna on the battlefield, wanting to drop your bow. I can't handle this. I'm dropping out. You see? So chant Hare Krishna. That's your first business. And then everything will make sense. It'll all fit together very nicely. Go to bed early, get up early, chant your rounds, and study in the early morning. It's the best time for studying. Can you share any special moment with Prabhupada? Well, I'm having one right now. You know, Prabhupada so kindly has given me this opportunity to speak to all of you. So I'm sharing a very special moment with Srila Prabhupada right now, actually. Do you think Prabhupada is dead and gone? Huh? Do you think Prabhupada is dead and gone? If you do, then think again. Spiritual master lives forever by his divine instructions, and his disciples live with him. So I'm living with Prabhupada at every minute because I'm holding to his instructions. He chant, read and preach as much as possible for making a revolution on this planet. So this is a special moment with Prabhupada right now. I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. Okay. In the Gita, the Lord instructs not to worship. That's funny. He meant to say demigods, but he has misspelled it as dummy gods. I like that. However, I get confused by knowing that the Lord Ram worships Shiva. You know where it describes that Ram worships Shiva? Not in the Valmiki Ramayana, but in the Tulsidas Ramayana, which Prabhupada said is not completely bona fide. That's a fact. He says the Tulsidas Ramayana is tinged with Mayavadi philosophy also. We don't recommend you study the Tulsidas Ramayana. I mean the Tulsidas. You study the Valmiki Ramayana. That's where you... But even if Lord Ram did worship Lord Shiva, we know from the Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna worshipped Sudama Brahman in Dwarka. Krishna can worship his devotee. There's nothing wrong. Okay, during a discussion with my friend, he mentioned some verses from the Bhagavatam that describe the heavenly planets and the beauty of the damsels over there. Oh yes, they're very beautiful. They're more than 1,000 times more beautiful than the girls here. But the damsels of Vaikuntha, they're 1,000 times more beautiful than the girls in the heavenly planets. But Krishna is so much more beautiful. That means there are a million times more, the Vaikuntha girls, in the spiritual world, they're a million times more beautiful than the girls here. But even though the girls are so beautiful, and the men are also so handsome for the girls, you see, no one is carried away by that beauty. Everybody's simply absorbing Krishna consciousness. Even though you may have a a associate there is more beautiful, a million times more beautiful than Miss India or whatever it may be. So anyway, Ruchava Torda is saying that such literature is distracting and useless. Devotion to Krishna is the only essence. Does this amount to a sin? No, you shouldn't say that about the Bhagavatam. There's everything in the Bhagavatam is spoken for a purpose. But if you didn't mean it in an offensive way, you meant, so I don't take it as a sin that you said that. But you have to be careful. There are verses in the Bhagavatam which describe the heavenly damsels, and it doesn't mean that there's a purpose for them. It's to help us understand everything in relationship with the supreme beauty of the spiritual world. So it wasn't really a sin, but don't be careful not to do that. You didn't mean it in a bad way, so it wasn't a sin. But at the same time, be careful not to criticize the verses of the Bhagavatam. How would you, being from the strongest country of the world, something me, every me follows, how would you, being from the strongest country of the world, every something follows U.S., come to enlightenment of Krishna? We Indian follow U.S., everyone from India wants to go to the U.S., like these. What message do you have to Indians who don't follow Krishna? Yeah, it's considered. I mean, I remember it didn't happen in India. I remember one time I was in Eastern Europe. It's the same mentality, you know, I got to get to the U.S. Somebody said, can I look at your U.S. passport? And they pulled it out and they looked like it was pure gold. They just looked at him and, wow. You see? But actually, this is an illusion, you see. What good is being in the U.S.? If you go there, you'll see how people are so miserable there, you see. All of that wealth, all that power, all that prestige, the iPods and the iPads and iPhones and, you know, all this stuff. These people are miserable. I mean, I grew up in that country. And I was miserable in that country. And that country was much better then. It was much more, the standards of morality were much higher then. It was a much more beautiful, wonderful country back in the 50s than it is now. That was 50 years ago. It's become so degraded now compared to the way it was 50 years ago. But even then, 50 years ago, I was miserable in that country. Because there was no Krishna consciousness. And their Christian religion was simply based on give me, give me, give me, give me, give me, give me. There was no bhakti. He was just trying, approaching God for fulfilling material desires. There was no rasa there, no taste. So Prabhupada made fun of the Indians who come to America. He called them new crows. You see? If there's a big garbage heap, you see, the crows are going there every day to pick at the garbage. Yeah, all right, here we are at the garbage heap. But if some new crow comes, he goes, wow, look at all this garbage. Running around all excited, you see. So the Indians who come to America, we see they're like the new crows. Yeah. We Americans who've been there, grew up there, yeah, just some old garbage heap is all it is. No big deal, you know. And then the Indians come, wow, look at this garbage heap. So don't be a new, don't aspire to be a new crow. You see, become a swan. We are teaching you how to become swan, not crow. Okay? All right. Krishna is the source of everything, then it should be beautiful. It is beautiful. When you see it in relation with Krishna, this light, this lamp is very nice. It illuminates in the darkness. But if it's disconnected from the powerhouse, what use does it have? You see? So it has a beauty of illumination. That is, its beauty is its illuminating power. But that illuminating power is only there when it's connected with the powerhouse. So everything is beautiful when you connect it with Krishna. That's the thing. But when you disconnect it from Krishna, it is dark and ugly. share with again the same question. Share one of your most memorable and important moments with Srila Prabhupada. I just did. A few minutes ago I told you, and now the same question again. Actually, the spiritual master's presence is manifested in the form of his instructions, and I did receive many instructions from Prabhupada. He gave me advice on how to become a powerful preacher, and I take that as very important advice. Previously, I had been a songwriter, a musician, and I attracted many people by my music. They loved my music, they applauded, they got all excited by my music. And I could see that, well, you know, in this way, by becoming appreciated, they liked the music, they liked the lyrics, they were going with the music. And I could see that this was a way to that I could spread Krishna consciousness, you see, by becoming an influential propagator of ideas. So I had some idea that I asked Prabhupada, can I aspire like that? To become, you know, become an influential propagator of ideas in this way. To me it didn't seem like a material desire, it seemed like a spiritual desire. It's not for any name and fame that I wanted it, but I wanted to become a powerful, influential person who could actually impact, you know, in the widest possible degree, the world society. So I asked Prabhupada about that. And he confirmed to me it was a spiritual desire. But then he gave me some tips on how to actually become like that. He said, no karma, no jnana, no yoga, all material desires, zero. That was the tip he gave me. So I'm in this way, I'm trying to follow Prabhupada's order to be a pure devotee. Not easy to be a pure devotee. Of course, it's actually the easiest thing in the world to be a pure devotee, but the mind keeps getting in the way. So I'm trying to be a pure devotee of Krishna. Begging for Prabhupada's mercy, I can do that. For me, these instructions of Prabhupada are the most important thing because I hear them, they reverberate in my heart. Prabhupada is telling me to become a pure devotee, completely free from all material desires. In this way, I can become a powerful propagator of Krishna consciousness movement to save the poor souls of this world who are drowning in ignorance. So, in this way, Prabhupada's orders and instructions that he gave me, that is more important than just, you know, seeing him walking down the sidewalk or something, which was also very nice. But the instructions are the more powerful than the physical presence. It is stated that the guru is manifest in two ways. There's the vani manifestation and the vapu. Vapu means his physical presence. Like the time I had some exchange with Prabhupada in front of a Los Angeles temple. You know, that's very nice. But the instructions he gave me, that's more powerful. When you think about what Prabhupada explains from his association with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, does he say, well, I was walking one day in front of the temple and Bhakti Siddhanta looked at me in a very wonderful way? Does he ever say anything like that? No, he says, he gives the instructions he received from Bhakti Siddhanta. You see? So my prime meditation is on the instructions I received from Prabhupada, not that, well, the way we had some interchange from the L.A. temple or what he said, you know. No, the orders he gave me, those are the important things. So in this way, I constantly associate with Prabhupada by remembering the orders that he gave me and praying for his mercy that I can carry them out, that I can become completely free from karma, jnana, yoga, and all material desires, so I can actually become a powerful person for propagating this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. we tend to become complacent in our practice of Krishna consciousness. I want to become sincere in my practice, but because of unorganized, unplanned habit, I struggle. Well, get organized. Here's an easy way to get organized. You have a little notebook, and every day you write down, okay, today is now, you know, tomorrow morning you can write down, you know, 17 October, and you can put your list of everything you want to accomplish today. And you do this. Put your list down of everything you have to do. Everything that you need to accomplish. These are the things I have to accomplish today. And make me determined, I must get these things done today. And then as you accomplish each one, you check it off. In this way, by becoming organized, and you see, you'll become very happy in Krishna consciousness. One should be organized in one's activities. So by having a list, you see, this will give you determination. I have this list, now I have to go down the list and execute all these activities. So in that way, by making a plan every day, this is my plan. Today I will do this. And by executing your plan, then you'll feel very happy at the end of the day. I was determined to accomplish this, and I accomplished it by Krishna's grace. What practical steps should we take to rapidly achieve the higher day? That's described by Rupa Goswami. The first step, Gurashrayam, take shelter of one abide spiritual master. That's the first step. Second step is take initiation. And so in this way, you see, that's, you want to make rapid advancement, just like in India. Of course, it's illegal in the U.S., but in India we see there's a system for people who ride the bicycles. They have a long way to pedal that bicycle, so they get a little help from a truck or a bus. They grab on, you see, and they just go for a free ride. You see? So you want to make rapid advancement, you have to grab on to a bona fide spiritual master. Just grab a hold of him. And don't let go. And I guarantee you, if you grab a hold of a bona fide spiritual master and you don't let go, you're going to make rapid advancement. Rupa Goswami's instruction. The first step, Garashrayam, the first step in bhakti is to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And that's what he says. It's Prabhupada quotes it in the Nectar Devotion. Okay, we have to find happiness in Krishna. But sometimes we feel more and more problems while practicing Krishna consciousness. So how to understand this and how to become, to balance and become fixed up? Well, you have to see those problems as blessings to help you go deeper into the ocean of Krishna bhakti. In other words, it's like in the Gulf of Mexico, where I live near that Gulf of Mexico. These huge hurricanes come. Very deadly hurricanes. But if you go deep within the ocean, there's no more influence of the hurricane. The hurricane's on the surface of the ocean. So your problems that you're having, that's on the surface. If you go deep within the Krishna consciousness, then you will go completely beyond all the problems. And they won't bother you because you'll be so deep in Krishna consciousness. There'll be something happening up there on the surface. And you're deep within the mellows of Krishna bhakti. But you'll still deal with them. But you won't be disturbed by them. That's the key. How easy, difficult is it to channel or channelize mundane knowledge of transcendental service? It's very simple. Mundane knowledge means, are you doing it for fun or are you doing it for money? Be honest. You're doing it so you can get so you won't have to work digging ditches the rest of your life. That's all. You want to have a better income. So, mundane education means to get a better income. So you have to be determined in your mind, because right now you're paying money to get educated. You're not getting paid. You have to be determined that in the future, when I get money, that money will all be spent for Krishna. It'll all be spent in a Krishna conscious way, not for sense enjoyment. So now while you're doing, you have to, the actual application of your knowledge of fully dovetailing, it will be later on, not now. But you have to be determined and you have to cultivate that desire to be a pure devotee while you're doing your studies. How to overcome that sense gratification that may make the service not completely pure? You have to understand that to whatever extent your devotional service is tainted by sense gratification, you are going to be miserable. Do you want to be miserable? No. So it's a matter of intelligence. Why should I hang on to sense gratification, which is the very source of misery? Let me kick that rascal out of my heart and become a pure devotee as soon as possible. Okay. How did you come to Krishna consciousness? 20 minutes? Well, I don't have time to tell that one. But I can give you a little thumbnail sketch. And what inspired you to continue this life? That's another question. Well, I came to Krishna consciousness because my father always told me, he said, "Son, your college days will be the happiest days of your life." So I believed him, and he's prepared myself for my future happiness by studying well, getting good grades in high school, and doing well in high school, exceeding academically, became a leader and everything, and award-winning speaker, so many things I did in high school. But then I went off to college thinking, wow, this is going to be, Dad said this is going to be the happiest time of my life, and guess what? I was miserable. And the going to college meant you move out of the house, and now I live with my family the whole life. In America, when you go to college, that's it. Now you're on your own. You don't live at home anymore. And if you do, you have to pay rent. It was, that was the American way, at least in our family. So now you're kicked out of the nest, you go to college, you get your training, and you're on your own. And I wasn't very happy. I was pretty miserable. And I was thinking, this is the happiest time of my life, and what my life will be like, you see. And I was thinking, what's the use of, here I am working hard to make good grades, to get a good job, to get a good wife, to get a good house, to get some good kids and a good car, to get a good grave. A nice grave, you see. Didn't make sense. What's the purpose of all this? It didn't make sense to me. It did not make sense. And I wanted to know, what is the purpose of my life? And there was no professor, no book, no course, nothing in that college that could teach me what is my purpose of existence. So I had to look elsewhere, and I finally found it. It took me years of searching. I began my search in the spring of this fall of 1965, which is the same time that Prabhupada set foot on America. That's when I became keenly interested to know who I am and what is my purpose of life, the same time that Prabhupada arrived in America. But it took me all the way until the spring of 71, which is 72, six and a half years? Five and a half years, It took me 5.5 years to finally come to Krishna consciousness. And those were tough years. They were very tough years. I had to make a lot of heavy-duty choices. Yeah, a lot of painful decisions I had to make for the sake of becoming self-realized. And I made those sacrifices. I made them, even though it was difficult and it wasn't easy. I made them because I knew that just, becoming materially successful was not going to do it for me. So I didn't fully answer the question, but in my search, finally one friend, he came one evening in 1968, He came to my apartment. He taught me the Hare Krishna mantra. I didn't know about the movement yet. I was looking for a meditation technique that would bring me to spiritual enlightenment. And I had tried so many things that didn't work. So now here's somebody came with a new technique, chanting Hare Krishna. And I tried it, and wow, it was great. I felt like I would come home every night from my job. I got a poster of Radha Govinda. I put him in a little altar. And I must have been an Indian in my previous birth to do all this, because just out of nowhere I started worshipping Radha Govinda and chanting Hare Krishna. I hadn't even met the devotees yet. And so I was sitting there every night worshipping Radha Govinda, and I felt like I was just going on a magic carpet and taking off into higher dimensions, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. And then the prasak was, you have to go to school, you got to get your degree. I said, forget it. I'm not going to be a part of this material world. I'm just going to go to India and become a sadhu, you know, one of those mendicants in the holy places, you know, give up the material world. So I packed up all my belongings, shifted back to my parents' house. I was hitchhiked in New York City to get a job on one of those freighters, you know, going to India. Worked my way to India on a freighter, like, you know, like the Jaladutta is one of those boats that goes back and forth between New York and India. And but on the way, something inside said, you're not supposed to go to India, you're supposed to go to San Francisco. So that was a complete opposite. You know, I was here, I was in Texas, and, you know, New York is on the East Coast, and San Francisco's on the West Coast. They did a complete about face, and I headed for San Francisco instead. Yeah, and I arrived there in Golden Gate Park, San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, Golden Gate Park, in December of 1968. I walked into the park, first place I went, and there they were. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The devotees on Harinam. Well, the trouble was, I've been reading, for self-realization, I've been reading all these Mayavadi books, you know. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. And that's all I knew. I thought that was Indian philosophy, that you're God. That's what everyone in India, I thought that was what the thing was. You're God, you're the incarnation of God. You just have to realize it. So when the devotees, you know, I'd been reading the Mayavadi books for like 2 years. And, you know, I was pretty poisoned by it. So my friend had taught me the mantra. I knew that was pretty good. I walked into the temple, and I was they invited me back to the temple, which was the second temple. If you studied ISKCON's history, you know, the first temple was 26 Second Avenue in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. The second one was 518 Frederick in San Francisco. So I walked into the number 2 temple of ISKCON, the Frederick Street Temple. And I was chanting, Hare Krishna. And some Bhamatrini says, oh, you're chanting so nicely. And I was thinking, oh, she only knew that I am Krishna. Ha, 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 ha. So I was pretty well, I wasn't quite ready to surrender yet, you can understand. It took me a few years of having you know, Maya's kicks to bring me to my knees to understanding I'm not really God and I have to surrender to the Lord. So when I came to that point, in the spring of 1971, I was back in Austin, Texas. And when that happened, when I came to that point, I was begging the Lord, please reveal to me how I can be your perfect servant. I knew I wasn't God now. I knew I just had to surrender to God. And I was begging for guidance. And then 175 miles away, there was a famous ISKCON devotee named His Holiness Vishnu Janaswamy, and he got the inspiration to come to my city. Krishna inspired him to come to Austin. At the same time I was begging Krishna for guidance, Krishna, within the heart of Vishnu Janamaraj, inspired him to come to Austin. And then after I met him, then I understood, yeah, this is it. This is how you surrender to the will of God. Vishnu Janamaraj is showing exactly how to do it. You become a disciple of His divine grace. Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Astatara Sata Shishimad AC Bhakti Vedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. So that's how I came to Krishna consciousness. Okay. Now, the next question, what inspires you to continue? Prabhupada's orders, that's all. Prabhupada told me, continue enthusiastically as surely you're doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. Prabhupada's orders have inspired me to continue for almost 40 years now. Next year will be the 40th anniversary of my Diksha. In 2011 will be the 40th anniversary of my Diksha. Okay. How to learn to pray feelingly and how to stop praying mechanically. Well, beg Krishna to help you. My dear Lord, I'm sick and tired of praying mechanically. Please bless me, I can pray feelingly. And Krishna will help. How to avoid offenses and how to control over anger, greed, lust. You got to purify him. Become angry at the demons who are misguiding this planet right now. Become greedy to make the whole world Krishna conscious. You see? Become lusty to offer the whole world to Krishna. I want everything for Krishna. In this way. Purify those by offering them to Krishna. Please explain to me what is Brahma Bhuta. Brahma Bhuta is the stage just prior to, it's the mode of goodness actually. You become fully situated in goodness. That is the Brahma Bhuta stage. You're on the verge of entering into bhakti. You're not quite there yet, but you're getting there. You have the knowledge of bhakti. You're seeing everything in relation to the knowledge of bhakti. You're doing everything you can to be fully absorbed in bhakti, and because of that, you become pretty blissful. And from there, you go on to becoming a pure devotee. As described in Bhagavad Gita, if you want to know more, go to Bhagavad Gita, chapter number... what is that verse? Not 11, it's... Chapter 18, verse 54. You can study about it there and more. 18:54. How to become consistent in the practice of Krishna consciousness. I generally decide to do some activity daily, but after some time I forget it. Please suggest. Well, you need having a writing down somewhere what you want to accomplish and what you... If you can't... Writing it down can help you. You have your monthly planner or your daily planner. This is what I want to accomplish, and you put it in writing, you post it somewhere, you put it in your notebook, you have something. But then you put it in writing, this is what I'm committing myself to, put it in writing so you can see it again and again, that can help. We are getting a sort of happiness or bliss for some time. The rest of the time is just the opposite. It means the whole day feels burdensome, not just for college, work, and not how to feel bliss throughout the day. Well, if you're not feeling blissful, that means you're not remembering Krishna. That's it. If you're getting Krishna. If you remember Krishna, immediately you become ecstatic. So just be Krishna conscious and you become blissful. Lord Krishna is there in every particle of this universe, and everything comes from Him. So misery, good and bad, and also comes from Him. Isn't it good that Krishna... So isn't good also and bad also Krishna? Why did He create this good or bad world? No. Krishna does not create bad. We create bad. By misusing our independence. Krishna has created... Everything is good of Krishna's. We are the ones who make bad by giving up Krishna's service. Please, if possible, share your feelings when you look back at your own country, USA, full of material advancement and sense gratification. I'm going to revolutionize the place. That's what I feel about it. Because if we can make America Krishna conscious, then we can make the whole world Krishna conscious. I'm very happy to be... have an American citizenship, an American body. It gives me some foothold into preaching in America in a powerful way of knowing their culture from the inside out. And I think it's Prabhupada said that in India is his mother and America is his father. He was very proud of the American nation and helped him to establish his movement. Prabhupada loved America, actually, because it helped him. The India, nobody would give even one, no, not even one person would fully come forward to help Prabhupada in India. It was when he went to America that so many thousands of young boys and girls came forward to fully give their lives to Prabhupada. You think Prabhupada's not grateful? If it hadn't been for America, this country, this movement had probably never gotten off the ground. What happened in America? No, it was a special arrangement of Krishna. The American nation is very blessed because they are the nation that that came forward when no one else would help Prabhupada. They are the nation that Krishna arranged to help Prabhupada. So America is a very blessed nation for that. In spite of all their nonsense, they are the nation that helped, that established this movement and gave Prabhupada full facility to preach in America. And they gave him a green card. He had full status in America to remain there. They gave him full status. They very much appreciated Prabhupada in America. So many people, the scholars, and so many leading, of course, there was the politicians who were worried also. They said this Hare Krishna movement, it is spreading like an epidemic, and if something is not done to stop it, it will soon take over the government. And they're worried. See all the, because even though we were only a few thousand people, we were out on the streets of the major cities, singing and dancing every day, and in the airports. It's like, there's a word in English word, ubiquitous, which means everywhere. Everywhere you go, you see the devotees. In the downtown, the airport, there'd be devotees. You'd see devotees everywhere. Even though we were a small number, we were very visible in the old days in America. Wherever you go, there was the devotees. Oh, there they are again, there they are again, there they are again. So they really felt the pressure. And there was a period of time when the parents were hiring these deprogrammers to kidnap their children and convince them to give up Krishna consciousness. But sometimes they were successful in doing that, and many times they were not successful. The devotees would outsmart the deprogrammers and pretend like they had become converted into a karmi again, and they would make a run for it. Okay, one reason asked me, what are you Hare Krishna's doing? What are you doing during wars? So many people are dying in World War. Kargi War? What's this Kargi War?
Kargi War. The fight between India and Pakistan war was there.
Ah, okay. And you are simply chanting Hare Krishna. How to answer that? We are not against war, actually. How can we be against war? The Bhagavad Gita is spoken on the battlefield. Not against war. If the war is for Krishna, we are in favor of such a war. The system, though, the proper system is there's the Kshatriya, the Brahmin class is meant for giving knowledge. The Kshatriya class is for engaging in warfare activity. The Kshatriya class. We are in favor of creating a powerful Kshatriya class who will defend against the attack of aggressors. We're not against that. That's part of our system. Many times one's attracted by sense gratification inside Krishna consciousness, like out in the prasadam, it becomes difficult to control the mind at that time. What should be done in such situations? Just take what you need. Don't take what beyond what you can easily digest. I mean, why wipe yourself out by overeating and getting all bloated and feeling miserable? Doesn't make sense. Take what you need. Everyone knows what they can handle. It's not that somebody has to tell you, you know, you're not allowed to take that. But you know what you can handle. You know what's going to be beyond what's going to help your Krishna consciousness. It's not wrong to enjoy a sweet every now and then. Prabhupada said a sweet every now and then. It's not wrong. The thing is to be balanced. I mean, I've remember devotees sometimes are so unbalanced, they're fanatical. I was one time at a Ratha Yatra festival. I was standing there with a sweet, you know, getting ready to eat the sweet. I was a brahmachari at the time. One brahmachari came up to me and he said, "Stop! That's a dhoti whitener." In other words, you'll get married. If you eat that sweet, you're going to fall down from brahmachari ashram. You're going to be wearing a white dhoti as a householder if you eat that sweet. Can you imagine what a fanatic he was? I went ahead and ate the sweet, and I remained brahmachari for many, many years. I was a brahmachari for 14 years. And he got married right after that. So, I mean, don't be fanatical about it. You can enjoy prasadam, you can have enjoy your prasadam, but at the same time, don't make yourself sick. Don't just eat so much you have to just go sleep for 15 hours, you know what I mean? Be balanced about it. Enjoy your prasadam, but at the same time, you know, understand if you eat too much, you're not gonna feel happy either, you become miserable. So, you said that one should see the hand of Krishna behind everything. But many times we are at fault. And we tend to see, don't see Krishna's hand, but not your faults. See, that's when I'm not allowing myself to be in the hand of Krishna. I'm trying to jump out of Krishna's hand. That's when I make the mistakes. So anyway, our time has run out. I don't know what to say because there's so many questions here and you all are so wonderful. We have to end it though because time is there.
If you wish, you can continue for 15 more minutes. If you wish, you can continue for 15 more minutes.
No, I can't. I have to balance. I have to get up early in the morning. See, I have to balance my sadhana. So everything is very nicely done. Actually, I have to do a little deity worship right now. A little deity seva I have to do for Sri Sri Radha Damodar. But I have to do a quick wrap-up here. So, I'm very happy to see so many bright faces, so many sincere devotees, people who are taking, sincere souls, taking the path of Krishna consciousness. This gives me great happiness and joy because in the beginning, Prabhupada had the American disciples here. No Indians, hardly any Indians wanted to join our movement. Prabhupada was speaking to some of the young Indian boys at that time, I remember. And he said that he was trying to convince them to join, you see. He said that actually this whole world is being managed by rogues and demons. He said, you should make your life successful and take the management. So we want to create here a class of leaders. You see, this is our mission. And we want in every country of the world that the young men, the intelligent, educated young men who have leadership qualities should become fixed up in Krishna consciousness so that we can actually have, in the future, we can have qualified leaders running this country, running every country on the face of this planet. Either as the Brahmin priests who guide the political leaders or as politicians. Both things, you see. We want Krishna conscious Brahmins, then we want Krishna conscious Kshatriyas. And then naturally, if that's there, if you have the Brahmin and Kshatriya class Krishna conscious, then naturally you'll have Vaishyas who are Krishna conscious and Shudras who are Krishna conscious. But the most important thing is the heads, the Brahmin class. So we are training here, especially Brahmin class. Real Brahman, not the two-paise Brahman, you see. But the real Brahman by quality, shamadamashtaparashocham, chantirarjivamayivacha, jnanam vijnanamastakyam, brahmakanamasvabhavajam. We're training you how to become peaceful, how to become self-controlled, how to become austere, how to become clean, how to become tolerant, how to become knowledgeable, how to become wise, and how to develop all religious bhakti qualities within your heart. So please, take this training that the devotees are giving you very seriously. You become first-class Brahmin Vaishnavas. And you'll be able to do the greatest service for your country of India and the greatest service for the whole planet. So we thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.